Welcome to Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts, Hannah Elizabeth
and Kate Mitchell. This is a place where you can find true crime tales, morbid mysteries and all things spooky.
We are two Scousers with a true crime and red wine passion. Expect wine reviews, Scouse banter and much more.
Our podcast does include graphic content and explicit language. Discretion is advised.
So grab a bevy, it's about to get heavy.
Hoopers are well. Episode 9.
Episode 9.
Oh yeah.
In the morning.
I know we're doing it a bit different today, guys. We've had a busy schedule and we've not been able to meet up in the evening. So it's actually morning time.
Full of energy.
Full of energy, bright and breezy.
Sunny outside.
Yes, actually.
It's giving me like a bit of, even though it's absolutely freezing, it just makes me excited when I see the sun.
No,
it gives
same.
Me a bit of summer vibe.
It's Saturday, so we've got the weekend ahead of us.
Woo!
But yeah, so that obviously means again with the wine, we haven't got one.
We have been so sober, Jan.
We're not living up to our true crime and
Feb will be boozy.
Boozy, everyone.
Right, on the next one, we're having a bevy.
Yeah,
we're going to actually have a bevy.
In our mouth.
Yeah, in our mouth. In and around our mouth.
In and around our mouths. So we haven't got a wine for us. Hannah's drinking a coffee.
Cappuccino.
Cappuccino. And I'm drinking an Oasis, like a child. but I bought them yesterday, and I was thirsty. So, yes, I sound a bit bunged up, but I'm living with a cat that I'm allergic to, so I think that's what it is.
I'm still sounding bunged up and sniffing from this nose job,
so
sorry. Get one in there.
Anyway, so thanks everyone who signed up to Patreon.
Yeah, thank you so much. We are so excited that we've got some Patreons.
Yeah, keep it coming, please, and thank you. And as I say, we're working on everything else that we're going to be bringing to you. And I don't think there's actually anything...
Any news?
Other than, no, there isn't any news really. I think we'll just get into it.
Get right into it,
I think this might be a longer one. I mean, I've got loads of pages and notes, but it depends on obviously how quickly we get through it. So,
okay,
we best get started.
Let's get started.
Now, this one, just to give you a heads up, we say this every week, this one's a bit different.
Yeah, we do.
And I feel like we've said it like 4 or 5 times. Like,
I'm just vaping.
Oh, at least it's not Ciggy, so, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we say every week, like, oh, this is a bit different, and it is, but it isn't. It's still a true crime case, but the point of it, the whole, like, reason why I've done this is just because it's actually a very, very interesting topic, and it makes you think. So, episode 9 is called The Perfect Witness.
Ooh.
Question mark.
Question mark. Okay. I'm excited.
Okay, so Mark Twain once wrote that nothing spoils a good story like the arrival of an eyewitness. Now, he died in 1910, which of course was a time when, like, all he could rely on was witness testimony and eyewitnesses. Blood typing wasn't a thing till, like, the 1930s. DNA wasn't a thing till, like, the 1990s. So they relied on eyewitnesses or written and signed confessions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just keep that in your head.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to the future.
To the future.
To where are we, the 80s? Jennifer Thompson was a 22-year-old with a 4.0 grade point average and lived in North Carolina. A 4.0 grade point average is very good, apparently. What? Like, I got a 4.0 GPA.
What's that?
It's like an American thing. It's, I don't know, it's like a way they... You know, we get like A levels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like we get like an A or
what,
whatever.
What, so she's clever?
So she's, this is a very good, great point
okay.
average.
Ooh.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
What's her name again?
Jennifer.
Okay.
22, 4.0 grade point average and lived in North Carolina. Her boyfriend went to another college in a different area, but during this period that we're going to be discussing, it was the summertime and he was back in Burlington, which is the area they lived in,
yeah,
to spend the summer there with Jennifer.
Okay.
And he was taking some like summer classes and was going to be in the area for the summer. Now, Jennifer was blonde, 5'2". She was very athletic and had a great routine when it came to like keeping active. She played tennis, lifted weights, and she actually preferred to walk the 3-mile journey to and from campus every day. Getting
what?
Those steps in, I know.
Are you joking?
I've actually put in brackets, legit, she was what I aspired to be.
What the, like, no, when I drive to the shop, or...
No, I know, but, like, that is, like, goals in it. And then this bit, she was a self-professed knee freak, kept her home tidy and made her bed every morning. I mean, you're like that anyway.
I'm not.
Your house is spot.
Yeah, but I don't feel like I'm that tidy.
No, Hannah, it smells of Tuflora 24/7.
Oh, I love that because I'm quite scruffy, I think.
No, I come in and I'm like, ooh.
Oh, thanks, babe.
Honestly,
I do try.
I legit thought, like, that's the difference. Like, that's your treat.
Oh, thanks. I don't feel like that, but thanks, babe. I love that. Do try.
No, honestly, he's a Florid up to death. Anyway, so she, as I say, she was a self-professed knee freak, kept home tidy, made a bed every morning, and she was just, like, a very all-round, kind of normal, nice girl.
Yeah.
Just had, like, a bit of extra things going for it in terms of, like, her athleticism, her grades, you know, she lives on her own, she's very independent, mm-hmm. She's 22. Now, she also thought she was safe. So, this was 1984. They knew about stranger danger. They also understood the dangers around, like, what young women faced at the time. So, Jennifer knew better not to, like, walk down a dark alley alone.
Yeah.
She didn't jog at night. She locked the doors and windows. So, she was doing everything right.
But you
that
know.
You would know, like, of at
yeah,
that time.
Common sense, one of them.
Now, one night in late July, after she taught her aerobics class, she spent the afternoon with her boyfriend shopping, got lunch, and then napping, being lazy in the aircon.
Cute.
Because it was a hot day. It was a hot and sticky day. They actually then went and played tennis. Oh, and then she went, oh no, could you be asked?
That's not my idea of a lazy
no,
day.
No, she's like, I played tennis. But yeah, they played tennis and then went to their favourite Chinese restaurant.
Oh, sounds like a fab day.
I know. She didn't drink anything alcoholic. She just had iced tea, but she did develop a headache and assumed it was down to the MSG in the Chinese food.
Oh, like the salty?
Well, like MSG is like the addictive thing. Oh, yeah. And the boss tasting thing that, like, I love.
How mad's that?
But if you eat healthy, that can give you headaches. And
yeah, because she's not used to it.
She's not used to it. So she put it down to the MSG anyway. That's what she assumed.
God, I'm so used to that.
Yeah, so I am MSG.
Me too.
And then she put the aircon on full blast and went to bed to kind of get over a headache.
In the night, though, right?
Yeah, so this yeah. is later in the evening. They'd be there for the tea.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they come back. So her boyfriend then came in with a glass of water and aspirin for Jennifer. And she remembers falling asleep to him, rubbing her back.
Oh, cute. Little now, back tickle.
The boyfriend, who was called Paul, I don't know if I've said that already, but he's called Paul.
Yeah.
Recalled that at about 11 o'clock yeah. in the evening, he gets up out of bed and heads back to his parents' house. Now, from looking into it, his parents didn't allow them to sleep in the same bed, and neither did her parents. They were, even though they were like 22, religion, just their, it was their values, like, you know, sleep in the same bed. So that's why at 11 o'clock, he's like, right, I need to go, I can't sleep in
the
bed.
Annoying, hon.
No, I know.
Because you're going to do whatever you're doing it before 11 o'clock then, aren't you?
No, but he's more at the point like, right, it's late now, I can't sleep here.
Yeah.
She's asleep, and he's like, right, I need to go back to my parents' house because we're not allowed to spend the night together. But anyway, that's yeah. just a little side thing. I included that in case you're wondering why he left at 11 to
yeah.
go back to his mum and dad's house. It's because he's not allowed to stay in the same bed as her. Both parents, either side, don't allow that. Now, yeah, he gets up out of bed and he locks the door behind him. So he leaves the house as normal, locks the door behind him. Now, after around 3 a.m, Jennifer felt something brush her arm.
No.
Now, sorry, I can't look at your feet.
No.
Sorry, okay. Jennifer felt something brush her arm. A few minutes before, she thought she had heard feet shuffling, but assumed she was dreaming. And
yeah.
dozed back off. But then obviously as soon as she felt something, that's when her heart started pounding and she tried to focus her eyes in the pitch dark.
3 a.m. is the witching hour.
No, I thought the exact thing. She pulled her sheet up to her neck and tried to look around the room, terrified. She finally saw the shape of someone crouching by her bed.
No, crouching? That's even worse.
No, I know, like creepy crouching down.
No.
No, I know. So she cried, "Who is that? Who's there?" The man jumped up and then jumped on top of her while she was struggling and screaming.
Oh my God.
She then felt something cold and metal press against her neck and she froze. "Shut up or I'll cut you," the man hissed at her and placed his gloved hand over her mouth. Now, She tried to say she couldn't breathe, and he seemed to click on to what she was saying and doing.
Yeah.
And he eased off.
Oh.
But then he pinned her arms over her head then.
Oh, my God.
So it's weird because initially Jennifer didn't immediately think of rape. She assumed he was there to rob her.
Yeah.
So she was shouting, you know, my purse is in the room. You can take all my money. Take what you want.
Yeah, take it all.
Babe. Yeah, like literally have whatever you want. And he just went, I got your $10. I don't want your fucking money. He then ripped off her underwear.
Oh, no.
So obviously with horror, she realised like she was going to get raped and possibly killed. So Jennifer recalls thinking over and over, like, I don't want to die, I want to live, I want to make it through this, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, like, stay calm, stay calm.
Yeah.
So her attacker, like, recognised that she obviously stiffened up, which is obviously what you would do, and said, just relax, it's been a long time for you, hasn't it, baby?
Just relax? Oh yeah, I'm gone, mate.
No, I know. And then he forced oral sex on her. Jennifer stayed focused, stayed calm, and kept repeating in her head, I don't want to die, I want to live, I want to live. Yeah. The attacker then said, your man's overseas in Germany, ain't he? And now this threw Jennifer, because her boyfriend obviously was there and lives in Burlington, which is where they live. Well, we spent the summer there.
Overseas?
It was actually her brother. Who that lived overseas or worked overseas, but how obviously would the rapist know?
No.
He also said, I know all about you, Jennifer. You're from Winston-Salem. And then she heard him kick off his shoes and take off his pants. Mm. She smelled cigarette smoke on him, and then he was inside of her. Now, whilst this was going on, he also told her that he knew she wore glasses.
While
all this is going on, he was going, I know you wear glasses, I know you can't see me. But little did he know...
She had the contacts in.
No! So I'm not laughing, Hannah. Her face and her expressions kill me off. I'm not laughing. No.
Oh.
Little did he know they were for distance purposes.
Oh.
So she could see him.
Yeah.
She could see him perfectly.
Okay.
So... She's concentrating, she's repeating herself, I need to focus, I need to stay calm. God, and she focused on memorising every detail she could about her attacker.
Yeah.
He was a black man with close cropped hair. He had almond-shaped, small and deep-set eyes. He had high, broad cheekbones. He had a faint moustache, smelt of smoke.
A fake moustache?
Faint.
A faint.
Sorry, not fake. Faint. Like a 12 o'clock shadow, whatever they call it. So obviously that is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you
firstly, mean, let's just like give that a bit of attention.
She's gone into that mood of like,
it's flight or flight, and she's fighting. So she's like,
that's
right,
amazing,
I need to know,
because I would like, I'd be
me and you have said many times we'd be rolling around screaming, dying.
Yeah, I wouldn't be paying any attention to him because I'd be in that much of a panic.
Yeah. So as I say, she's got his eyes, his cheekbone, the shape of his face.
Good on
her. His hair. His smell, everything. She obviously knows his voice. He's very talkative.
Yeah.
So, still trying to remain calm and keep her wits about her while she was being raped, she told him, listen, I'm afraid of knives. I can't relax. He then put the knife down.
Why? Where was the knife?
The knife was still at her.
Yeah,
He's got one, like, hands over her head. Both of her hands are over her head, pardon me, and he's still got a knife to her while he's raping her.
He's a serious multitasker.
She's saying, I'm afraid of knives, I can't relax, like, can you put it down, can you get it away from me?
Yeah.
And then she was like, can you put it outside? And then he goes, well, you ain't gonna call the police. So she promised him no. Mm-hmm. She went, just drop it outside, please, I can't relax. Now, she was cleverly and purposely using the same words he used, like relax, to kind of mirror him.
Yeah.
Because that's what they say, you mirror their attitude, you mirror their behaviour.
That's clever.
It puts them off, like, not puts them off, but it makes them at ease. If you're dead defensive and he's relaxed, then he'll get psyched up. Whereas if you mirror him, you're more likely to get something from him. And she's on to that, so she's being like, listen, I can't relax. You want me to relax?
You want me to relax? Yeah, I can't
relax.
Do what you say.
Yeah, the knife's scaring me.
Clever.
I know. So he's obviously... relaxing, like, to use the word, he's relaxing now.
Mm-hmm.
So he got up slowly, and you could tell, Jennifer said you could tell he was unsure because he was a bit like, ready to pounce type thing, but Jennifer jumped up and went, I have to pee. And she made her way to the bathroom. She took a blanket off the bed, wrapped it round it, because obviously she's got nothing on.
Yeah.
Well, she's got, I think she's got a top on. But obviously he's took her underwear off. So she's in the bathroom. But as she turned the light on, he kicked off, being like, turn the light off. So she turns the light back off.
Because he didn't want her to see him.
Yeah, properly. She didn't want him to see her. And also, like, if someone walks past and she's at the window and the light's on, you know, there's all these different factors. So he's like, keep that light off. But she closed the door and ran some water, checked the window. It was too small to fit out. And then she also didn't want to lock it and be trapped in there.
No.
So she had to walk back out to meet him.
Oh.
Like, can you imagine? Like, you're in the bathroom, you're like, right.
Like, what,
and then you realise, you've got to go back.
Yeah, yeah.
So she then, as I say, walked back out to him. He was stood in the living room by the front door. So the house is on one level.
Yeah.
There's not upstairs. Because I was baffled thinking, how did she get down the stairs? But it's all on one level. It's like a bungalow. So she's walked out of the bathroom and he's now by the front door, like in the hallway, in the living room. And he's by the front door because he's going to let the knife outside. She's like, can you put the knife outside? And he's like, yeah. So he's by the front door and he goes, you're going to let me back in, right? And she did her best to reassure him. And he opened the door, dropped the knife on the porch, but then slammed and locked the door behind him. So she was hoping he'd walk outside and throw the knife somewhere so she could run. But he didn't, like, open the door, latched it and shut the door again. So she then realised she couldn't get around him to the front door. So she thought, well, the other door is the back door.
Yeah.
So she casually said to him, I'm thirsty, I'm going to make a drink. Do you want something? So he was messing around with the stereo at the time and put some music on.
This is going like
that is baffling. He thinks that because he's clearly attacking him.
Yeah, like, he's a bit thick, you know.
Yeah, but he's not in the right mind anyway to be doing that.
No, of course, but...
But how fucking clever of her.
Yeah.
Being, like, trying to think, like, I need a wee. Like, oh, should we have a drink?
Yeah.
Just delaying
and
it.
And he must have been so thrown off.
I know. And he's probably thinking, what? Okay. So she asked him if he wanted a drink, and he was playing with the stereo, putting music on, and said, yeah, something alcoholic, and let's make this a party.
No, mate.
He then said, as she was, like, looking at him, can I have this? And it was took a photo of Jennifer off, like, the side in a swimsuit. So she was shocked that he even asked her, though.
Mm.
And, like, didn't... But she just nodded it, and he nodded, and he put it in his back pocket. Now, as she walked to the kitchen, she was taking everything in about his clothing and went over it in her head. She was stood near him at one point, so she was able to guess his height at around 6 feet. He wore dark khakis, which I think are like cargo pants.
Yeah.
Blue shirt with stripes on the sleeves, canvas boat shoes, and the gloves he wore were white knit. So now, the case, not the case, but the visuals in her head that she's memorised of him is eye shape, face shape,
she's
hair.
She's got like a good thing on him now.
Like, she's got the house, the clothes, everything he's wearing, his mannerisms, like, he's got a photo of her.
Yeah.
In his back pocket, you know all these different things. Now, she then turned the kitchen light on, knowing that he wouldn't come close to her because obviously she'd be able to see him. And he thinks at this point she's got bad eyesight and can't see him properly. And he's in the dark. Like, she's in the light and he's, like, in the dark in the living room.
Yeah.
But she made sure to make plenty of noise, like, running the tap, clinking ice, banging doors. And then, so like, she's doing that to make it look like she's definitely making him a drink. But she's obviously thinking, like, what the fuck can I do here?
Yeah, yeah.
He then shouts, wait, is that door locked? Now, Jennifer had to run. She ran straight out the back door and into her yard. It was like a misty, you know, misty rain.
Yeah.
That's like fog, but mist and rain all at the same time. And the grass, the grass was cool. So she was able to, like, run, but she wouldn't know if he was behind her because it was like muffling the noise.
Yeah.
So she was like, it's good because I can run. It's not frosty. It's not dry and hard, hurt my feet. I can run, but I can't hear if he's behind me.
Oh my god.
She tried the first neighbour banging and screaming on the door, no one answered. She kept running.
Oh, wait. She's got out now, she in the neighbours, was there no fence?
She's in the yard. Yeah, well, I am assuming there's, I don't know if it's a front yard or back. No, it's a back door, but there mustn't be like the way we have, like.
Oh, so she's like run round.
She's running. She's just running whenever she can. She tries to a neighbour's back door. Can't get in.
See your fucking door.
Yeah, well, I
don't just be screaming. Ah! Yeah.
Well, she was screaming, banging. No one answered. She then kept running.
Useless.
She ran to the next building and finally saw a light on in like a nearby, but she's in an apartment block, so you can imagine there's all different, you know, like buildings around her, and she sees one with a light on.
God.
So she hops over a small fence, screams, bangs, you know, rings the doorbell, bangs on the door, whatever, and she's screaming, "Help, I've been raped by a black man. He's after me." Now, the couple inside were awake, and the woman actually recognised Jennifer and let her in.
Yeah.
From, like, the area. It's a smallish town. It's like a it's like a college town where, like, when the college is in season, it's booming of students. Yeah. Then when they leave, it's quiet, but she lives there. So they call 911, and the husband's the husband of the couple that saved her stood by the door with a baseball bat as the rapist started to pace around the house.
No, oh my God, imagine that.
No. But then obviously once the sirens, he was gone. Once he heard the sirens, he was off. Now,
God, she did a
This is insane, this case. Now, Jennifer clearly acted in an incredible way during her attack. She was mirroring him, talking him down, getting him to get rid of his knife.
Yeah,
so that's like immediate danger. She's getting rid of immediate danger. Obviously, he's still dangerous, but that weapon is the most dangerous thing right now. So he's like, that's out of the picture. He's talking it down. She also didn't lose it when she was saved. She stayed calm in the ambulance while she was taken to hospital. She later did say she had blank spots in her memory of the ambulance ride because she didn't realise, like, the couple had put clothes on her.
Yeah.
And then when she was at the hospital, they were like, "Can you undress?" And she was like, "Oh shit, I've got someone else's clothes
like,
on."
Zoning out. Yeah.
So she's in a bit of shock, but she stayed firm that she remembered absolutely everything about the attack itself.
I wonder if if his intentions were to just rape her, or he was gonna kill her, or God.
We don't know. Now, she was taken to hospital where a rape kit was performed. Now, again, from like the research, and I got a lot of this information from another podcast and a book, which I'll go into. The first rape kit that she got was by, like, a doctor who was dead. Like, I've said it somewhere down the line, he was sloppy, like, he was fuming that he'd been called in that morning, you know, like, early in the morning to perform a rape kit. And
yeah.
But this is in the 80s when, like, nurses weren't sexual health nurses.
Yeah.
Trained in rape. They were just, like, obviously, everyone has always been able to be raped, but it's now treated in a very different way than it was in the 80s, is my point.
Yeah.
So, a rape kit was performed, like I say, a few hours later at the station. So she went to hospital, did a rape kit, goes to the police station.
Yeah.
While she's at the station, the detective assigned the case, which is Detective Martin Gordon, asked her, like, casually, like, "Did you get the morning after pill or a penicillin shot?" And she was like, "No."
No.
And he was like, "Well, you need to go back. Like, it's not being done properly. So that's, like, standard procedure." So he was like, "I'm really sorry, we're going to have to go back to hospital and get another rape kit." But he took her to a different one.
Yeah.
Different hospital that looked after her better, but I can't even imagine how she feels getting one rape kit, never mind fucking two.
Yeah.
She'd already spent hours at the police station answering questions. She was building a composite sketch, you know, like where they get the picture, what the
and
person
how
looks
mad
like.
Is that how they can just draw? I just can't get my head around how they do that.
Again, I thought from like films and stuff we watch, Law and Order and all that, you tell them and they draw. It's not just like that. You actually look through a book of like hundreds of different eye shapes and say, that's the eye shape. You then look through noses.
Because I've never got, even that big still,
so
how they put that together is insane.
But like I say, I legit thought I could never describe someone's, they look like.
No, me too.
I can't even say a word, but they just look like an idiot if I tried to describe someone.
Me
but
too.
Yeah, so that, like I say, she's been looking through a book going like, that's eyes, they're the same shape eyes. But they were a bit more deep set, so we'd know to put like shadowing and you know that kind of thing. But she's had a rape kit, been in the police station for hours, figured out the rape kit wasn't like effective enough, like she needed to get more naphtha pill and things like that. So has to go back. But other than that, the police were on it.
Mm.
They were like, "Oh my God, we're gonna catch this fella." Do you know what I mean? Like, so look, in the past we've discovered cases where the police haven't been the best.
Yeah.
These were on it.
They were good. They were on it.
Now, while she was in the second hospital, she heard a woman next to her crying and sobbing, and she asked the detective about her and was like, "Who's that? Like, what's happened to her?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh well, actually, she's also been raped, and we think it was by
the same
attacker."
Yeah.
Mhm. So Jennifer reminded the detective while she was in hospital, getting all, being all vulnerable, being like, listen, by the way, I am 1,000% sure I can identify this man if I saw him again. Like, I took everything in. Like, please believe me. Like, I'm a credible witness.
Mm.
So in the end, she was happy with the composite sketch. It wasn't perfect, but it, she said it was near enough a match to the face she had in her memory, yeah. So she was happy. Now, after the station, the police took her home to see if there was anything missing. So the scene had already been processed, but obviously they wanted her to go and be like, is anything missing? So they'd done fingerprint swabs, they'd done everything, nothing's there really.
Yeah.
But she's nothing stolen really. Things had been rifled through, like books and letters and a purse, obviously, which you'd said, like about the $10. They found a piece of rubber, which looked like it could be from a shoe. Like, it come off on a shoe, but
yeah.
She was like, it's not mine, and I wouldn't leave something on the floor, like, I'm a neat freak.
Yeah.
But she was able to point out, like, the frames he touched, the stereo, but he was wearing gloves, so it wasn't that useful, but it made her realise, like, I'll never live in this apartment again. Like, how long was he in the house before he came up, came to my room, do you know what I mean?
Fuck, that is so scary, isn't it?
Now, the following morning, the attack was all over the news. Pardon me. It was confirmed that there were, in fact, 3 burglaries that took place that night, but 2 of which females were attacked and raped. Now, this was the 1980s, so you can only imagine the news surrounding a case where a black man had attacked and raped 2 white women.
Yeah.
So that, and Jennifer says, like, she remembers that being the focus, like, oh my God, a black man's raped 2 women, not like, there's 2 victims.
There's 2 women here that have been raped.
Who have been raped and traumatised for life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometime later, I think it was about 11 days after the rape, Jennifer got a call from the detective wanting her to come in to do a photo array to see if she could identify her attacker. So that's where you see in the films, there's like a picture of 10 people, or they look through a book of people. So he insisted to her that the suspect may or may not be in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously to Jennifer, she's like, well, why would he call me in? He's obviously there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, she picked her attacker out, no problem. She then picked him out a second time in a physical lineup.
Yeah.
In a room where I think there were 7 men, and each of the 7 men had to repeat lines that he said to her, like, shut up or I'll cut you.
Right, see this, because I've heard this in other cases and that, when they do that. But if you were the attacker, would you change your voice?
I know, but...
How can you change it that much? It's not like a deep book.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think you can't... I know what you mean, but... But as well, what I was baffled about, it wasn't like behind glass or like a two-way mirror. It was, she was in the same room
as
him. There was a table and she stood in front of them. Yeah. Cool. And she said it was like going through it all over again. Like every time they said, shut up or I'll cut you.
Yeah, obviously.
Or like, it's been a while, ain't it, baby? Like the way he said it.
Yeah, yeah.
She was like, it was like a stab.
Yeah,
But she picked them out, number 5, and... She had picked out the same person as her attacker.
Fair.
So, but Jennifer wasn't surprised, though. Like, she had done something that most people would never be able to do. She kept her eyes open, by the way. Because when you could, if you were going through that, you'd shut your eyes, wouldn't you? You'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd tense up and shut your eyes. She relaxed, opened her eyes, focused the entire time, during the attack. You know, the almond-shaped eyes, the high cheekbones, fake moustache, the clothing, the shoes, the smell.
Yeah.
She was wrong.
Wait, what?
She
was wrong. What do you mean she was wrong?
She picked the wrong person.
No, she never. What?
Yes,
no.
She did.
What do you mean?
Right.
After all that?
Yep.
How did she pick the... Was the person in the lineup then?
Well, so...
No. I'm not having it.
Not having that.
She's just gone through all of that and she picked the wrong fella.
And she was saying, like, repeatedly, there's no doubt in my mind, like, the other victim... That we'll go into, she had like a bit more, she fought back, so it was like injured more. Yeah. Not saying that it was worse than Jennifer's ordeal, but because Jennifer stayed calm and cool,
yeah.
She had no physical injuries, she was just like obviously traumatised, but was able to focus. And she was like, there's no doubt in my mind, like this is the man, I've got him. But she was wrong.
Yeah, that is so confusing after all that, like in depth, like the clothes, the eyes.
So, the photo array that she first went to have a look at would be the beginning of something that is called unconscious transference. Now, this is where, like, unconsciously, you associate a similar face to who you to right. who yeah. you're actually picturing and convinced. So in your mind, you're right.
Yeah.
But that is a problem of eyewitness testimony because she was the perfect witness. She
of
did
course,
everything.
She was like the absolute perfect witness, and even the police must have thought like, this is great because she's got so much information to tell us.
Yeah, but the thing is, the police don't know she's wrong. Like, I'm telling you, there's still more to this story, but let's go. So, so unconscious transference. It's not like a weird phenomenon. It's just like, this is unconscious transference where in her mind, she's made someone on that photo array be the person that she's done it.
But and then when she sees them,
she's gone right. Yeah, so she's gone, well, he's on the photo and he's stood right there and it sounds like him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, but her actual rapist was not.
He wasn't in
on the photo
line.
Array. But because the detective thought he was and was like, Jennifer, come in, we're gonna. And he went, by the way, you might not be there, but Jennifer's like, why would you call me
convinced.
In? Yeah.
Yeah.
She's picked the picture of someone who looked the closest to her rapist.
Right, got, yeah.
She would later say that this first photo array influenced her in-person identification. Mm-hmm. So she's got her own, this is the person, but then because she's assuming that he's there, she's got to pick him out. So she's gone, well, that looks like him.
The most.
Yeah. And it's in-person identification has changed, but unknowingly.
Yeah.
She's not sad. She said, I had no doubt. Like, if you have a bit of doubt, you go, listen, I think it's him, but.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She was like, no, it's him. I know it's him. I remember him.
Yeah.
It was like, he was a couple of centimetres away from my face, do you know what I mean? So the man she chose became the rapist in her memories.
Yeah.
So even when she had flashbacks,
then she would
it was the person, the one she chose, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So she was so careful, she remembered every detail, she had no doubt in her mind. The man she chose was a man called Ronald Jr. Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
He was the same age as her, so 22, from the same area, but had grown up in the projects. He also had a record.
Yeah.
He had served 18 months of breaking and entering and the attempted sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl. He would later insist that he and the girl had been in a relationship, but she was white and he was black. The police charged him when her father found him and called the police.
14.
Wait. He was told to take a deal because this was common back then when it was a black defendant against, you know, like a white victim or whatever, because they knew the odds were never in their favour, so they used to just take deals.
Yeah.
And it turned much harder to fight. Now you're probably thinking, but he was only just turned 16 at the time. So although he's still a minor himself, and they said they were in a relationship, so 14 and 16, I'm pretty confident most people have been in that situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the dad found them together. He was like, right, he's sexually assaulting my daughter.
Okay.
He's robbing our house. He's black.
But he probably was. Yeah. Well, we don't know.
Well, he wasn't. He said, no, I should never have taken that plea deal. I should have fought it. But I was 16 and from the projects, like, you kind of understand why you take a deal to get 18 months rather than if he fought it, he'd probably get 10 years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but however, this was not the reason why Ron was a suspect. So they didn't pull him from that. His boss at work, who was a white man, actually called the police and said the composite sketch looks like one of my employees.
Yeah.
But Ronald believed he was targeted because he was known to date white women.
Yeah.
And his boss hated that he was like,
getting
all the birds. and he was actually dating a white woman at the time of the attack.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying? So the white men in the town, the white men in the town didn't like it, basically.
Yeah.
So he's going, hang on a minute. Obviously, I've got this record, which isn't helping me, but my boss doesn't like that I, like, flirt with the women.
And they're not really going to listen to that, are they?
No, exactly. So, the case went to trial. Jennifer was assured they had an excellent case, and she knew that although the case would be hard to go through, it was all going to be okay. Like, she came on as an excellent witness. Cool, calm, collected, as always.
Yeah.
She pointed him out twice in the courtroom and was like, it was him. She had no doubt. The second person who was attacked,
the other woman,
was unable to identify her attacker because he shined a light in her eyes. So this case was only him getting tried against Jennifer's attack.
Who was first. We don't know that. Like, who he attacked first.
I actually did know that, but I don't think I've written it down.
Yeah.
I think it was her. I think the second one
was Jennifer.
No, she was first, I think. Because he then got he might have then been wound up because he didn't get to like.
So yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I don't know. I should have wrote that down. Apologies. So as I say, the case is only against Jennifer's attack, not anything else, because he didn't have they didn't have her witness testimony to go. Yeah, that's him as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? No physical evidence was there, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the trial was set to begin early January. This time, there was no plea bargain. Ron was like, nah, I've learnt my lesson, I want to fight this.
Yeah, yeah.
He pled no guilty and was given a court-appointed attorney because he didn't have that much money. He did say that he could have afforded bond when it was like at like 150k. His family might have been able to put it together, but then they raised it to like 400k and was like, there's no chance. So he had to stay in prison till the court started. Now, whilst this is all going on and leading up to Ron's arrest, he had an alibi, right? He'd been at a party.
Mm-hmm.
He'd seen several friends. One of them was his brother. He got a ride home from a friend around 2:30, 3 in the morning whilst this attack was meant to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to write down the names and numbers of every single person that had seen him or he'd been in contact with. So he's like, ha!
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What he didn't realise, he got the dates mixed up. So when the police asked them, he got the dates mixed up. So it's just annoying because when
he would have had
his mother actually confirmed that the night of the attack he was asleep on her couch, but still had loads of alibi, like still had loads of witnesses. So he was asleep on the couch. The mum's boyfriend was there, and one of his sisters saw him, and it was a crucial mistake because now it looked like they were lying.
Now it looks like, well, I said the party and I got the date wrong. Yeah.
And now, but I was in my mum's and my sister was there and my mum's fella was there, exactly.
Bless Ron.
And all the people that he written down, all the people that were willing to come forward and go, no, he's a good fella, were not allowed to now because he went, well, the date's wrong, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was tried to, so Ron's defence attorney, like a lawyer or an attorney, tried to correct this in court, be like, by the way, this was incorrect, you got the date mixed up, but the damage is already done. Everyone was like, yeah, whatever, bye. Do you know what I mean? The trial went on and it was clear that there was no physical evidence tying Ronald to the attack at all. There was not one shred of physical evidence to the house, Jennifer, anything.
Yeah.
But her word is enough. And after 4 hours of deliberation, the jury found Ronald guilty. During his sentences, the judge kind of tried to make an example of him and brought up his previous conviction and this one being like, you're a monster, you're a menace to society, not knowing the two different, obviously not knowing all the evidence and not knowing that the first one he was in a relationship with her and he's just gone, look what you've done.
Look at this. Yeah, and like
from 16 to 22, and he was actually sentenced to life plus 50 years.
Oh my God, imagine that.
So there was never a way that he'd ever be paroled, he'd die in prison.
Oh,
so Ronald would then sent to prison, trying to adjust to his new life. He stayed quite tough in prison and, like, often was able to, like, not fight but scare attackers away before it led to a fight, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was a survivor, basically.
Yeah.
He worked out, stayed away from drugs, kept, like, his nose clean and was in great shape. And, as I say, never got into trouble, was able to kind of defuse situations or get on the defence and be like, nah, this isn't happening, and they'd back off. He was always able to defend himself. Now, after only 3 months in prison, he saw a young man who looked familiar. He realised he looked like the composite sketch that he had saw on the news before he was arrested.
In the prison?
In the prison. So he's 3 months into his term, his life term, and he sees him.
Oh, fuck.
He asked him where he was from, and he answered Burlington, which is the same area.
Yeah.
Ron introduced himself, and the man answered Bobby Poole. Ron then said, well, the fact is, mate, you look like the drawing of the suspect in the case that I'm locked up for. Did you have anything to do with it? Bobby answered, nah, man, not me, and walked away.
Nah,
Bobby was also incarcerated for rape.
Ow.
Now, over the next couple of years, so can you imagine he's 3 months into his sentence and he's like, that's him.
And he's like in the prison with him.
Right. So over the next couple of years, Ron fought. He fought when he had to, but he stayed in trouble, like I said.
Yeah.
And he asked for a job in the kitchen because he was allowed to eat his dinner like a load.
Yeah.
rather than being in the mess hall where, like, that's when it all kicks off, do you know what I mean? Like, you know on films where you see, like, hitting each other with the trays and that?
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm keeping myself away. Bobby also got a job in the same section in the kitchen duty. And to make things worse, people used to often get them mixed up.
No, because they looked the same.
They looked so alike. He thought, like, this was proof. Even the guards couldn't tell them apart sometimes.
Really?
So it had to be him.
Yeah.
This is the real attacker.
This is so mad.
And he needs to tell his attorney. But obviously, I was thinking, this is not written anywhere, but I was thinking, like, I wonder if he thought, like, am I going mad? Am I just hoping it's him? Do you know what I mean? But he's obviously dead set.
But then if everyone's saying as well, hey, he looks like you.
Yeah, like everyone's calling him Bobby and calling Bobby Ron.
That is mad, isn't it? What are the odds?
I know. So then, one day, another inmate who was practicing law, so he was one that, again, you see in every... This is very similar. Have you seen Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah.
Have you seen... Like, that's what kind of happens in Shawshank, isn't it? Like, someone confesses to the murder he's put in for. And there's also someone who's dead good at law.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, there's another inmate who's, pardon me, who's practicing law and he's helping other inmates with, like, their legal issues.
Oh, okay, see.
So he comes over to Ronald one day and explained that he'd been recently helping Bobby with his case and that he, in fact, admitted that he had been the one to rape the two women that night. So Ron got out a pad and pen or whatever it was, and started making notes. All these different things that he had figured out over the years. Well, it's a couple of years in.
Yeah.
All the things that he put together, like, that he lived from the same area, he looked the same, he'd confessed to two different people, like, one person so far, all these different things. Now, Ron wants to act on his feet. He didn't want to alert Bobby to this, so he had to stay cool and calm. Very similar to Jennifer, weirdly.
Yeah.
He couldn't get all excited. He couldn't be like, it's him. He had to act in, like, a proper manner.
Yeah.
So he's working on his letter to send to his lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He also fell fast on his feet one day when one of Ron's sisters come to visit and Bobby took a shine to her and said, hey, can I write to your sister? Like,
no.
I like her.
Yeah.
Ron was like, sure, yeah, but I want to send her a picture of you first.
Ah, see.
So that I wouldn't, like, to get her permission, I wouldn't just give you her address. Like, I'm going to send you a picture of her. And he's like, yeah, cool, okay. So someone in one of the different sections of the prison
like,
had
him. Oh, yeah, mate, you're in here for rape, but you can just talk to me.
No, but he doesn't know, and Ron's, like, acting cool, but you're like, but I need to send a picture of you. So Ron gets a Polaroid camera from someone in the prison and takes a picture of them stood next to each other. Right?
Yeah.
There's also something to say, the height. She put him as 6 foot, Ron's 6'4".
Okay.
The other woman said, I think he was around 6'9", 6'10", so that's quite a big difference. So Ron was buzzing because he's like that, 6'4". Bobby is 6 foot or just under, which is the right height, which both of them recognised. And obviously, it's him.
Yeah.
So, the picture never goes to the sister, obviously.
No.
He puts a little envelope with his letter and sends it to the attorney. And he's like, right, off you pop.
Yeah, see?
However, months went by and nothing happened.
No.
Ron starts to get angry and loses...
You need to make a film.
No, I know. Well, I don't know. Could Shawshank be based on... Nah, can't be. Don't know, maybe. I've never seen anything about that, but it's very, very similar. Months went by with nothing happening. Ron starts to get angry and loses patience. And there was one point where he was like, if I'm in here innocent, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
So he started making like a shiv or a shank. You know, like a thing to... Oh, yeah. Like a stabby thing, a knife, fucking hell. And he told his dad his plans, and his dad was like, if you do that, you then belong here.
Yeah.
What will that do? And he was like, oh shit, yeah. And then he's going through a lot, like, I would want to kill him.
Same.
Like, he was innocent, serving time.
Serving time.
In prison.
Yeah.
When the actual person is in the same prison, like, it's bizarre.
So annoying.
Bobby was then transferred from the prison, so he's like, oh, he's out of my reach now, like, what's going on? But he joins a choir, finds God a little bit, and he calms down. He's like, it's fine, it'll work itself out.
Yeah.
Months later, his attorney got in touch and told Ron that he had, in fact, been working on the case.
Good.
And the North Carolina Supreme Court overturned their ruling and ordered a new trial. So he wasn't exonerated, but he got a new trial.
Thank God.
So he's like that. He's buzzing. Right. So, but this is where it gets a bit hard. In the first trial, he was only charged for Jennifer's attack, wasn't he? It's been now 3 years, and the second witness isn't as traumatised anymore. And she's like, you know what?
Yeah, I want to
get involved now. Yeah. And I remember, and it was him.
No,
Corn. No.
Fuck off, out of the fucking picture.
So obviously, exactly. So obviously, Ron is buzzing. He's got a new trial, and then this bird, obviously, I say that really badly. This poor woman, obviously, she is a victim, comes along. This bird, that was harsh. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm saying it like how he must have thought. But
yeah.
She is still a victim here. And she is traumatised, comes along and says, oh, yeah, it was him.
Oh, no.
So, and he's also got still cool, calm, collected Jennifer, who's like, yeah, I still stand by my word. It's been 3 years. I've moved on. She breaks up with a fella, gets a new husband, like, meets someone who's, like, dead, kind of, like, easygoing, understands what she's gone through. She's happy and then gets pulled back to court again. So she's fuming and is like, point him out again. It was him.
Oh.
The second victim also goes, it was
him. But have they not seen this other fella, Ron?
Right, so.
Hello.
However, the two witnesses that claim Bobby had confessed to them, which is an inmate and the other inmate, the law guy.
Yeah.
They also managed to match Bobby's blood type to a blood smear at one of the crime scenes. It wasn't DNA, because again, it weren't out then, but blood type and was.
Yeah.
So they were able to say, for example,
O negative. Yeah, not Ron.
Yeah, so Ron is the good guy.
Yeah.
Bobby is the bad guy. But we've got Bobby's blood type at the scene.
And they looked as fit.
Right. Didn't matter though, the judge refused to see all that evidence. And it wasn't brought to court, but it was on record.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know the way in court, the jury's not always there. They get told to leave the room, don't they? And then they discuss something, then the jury get brought back in. So this was discussed in court. If someone was taking notes of it, it's on public record, but they said, nah, the jury don't need to see that. It's not.
Oh, this is so
But Bobby
sad.
Was like, you know what? It's heartbreaking, but at least it's on record.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That there is two confessions and blood type evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Ron was convicted again and sent back to prison.
Fuming for him. Absolutely fuming.
In the end, Ronald Cotton would serve nearly 11 years in prison.
No!
In September 1992, someone else took over the case and assured Ron that they were going to get him out. He met Dr. Rosen, or Rossen, and things seemed hopeful, and they worked on it, though, for the next 3 years, right?
Oh, my God.
So, this is where DNA comes into the mix. Now, it wasn't available in the first two trials because of time, but now it was. So, they've got the DNA.
Oh, God.
The DNA tied Bobby Poole, to the case, and Poole confessed.
Oh, my God.
Ron was finally free.
More than 11 years later.
Well, like, he served 11 years. But 3 years before that, that's when he said, right, we're going to take your case.
Oh, my God. And what did it say, like, what Jennifer and that?
Well, so throughout all of this, even when Ron had, like, his angry times and all these different things, that was obviously he went through for 11 years, he never actually blamed Jennifer or held any anger towards her. Obviously, Jennifer went through a lot. Like, as you could, she went through the trauma of obviously going through the attack.
Going through it all,
Then the two court cases, which are hell. She obviously held so much guilt, but she finally reached out to him, and they met up and hugged and cried together.
Aww.
She put her own shame and guilt into action and became an activist for the valuability of eyewitness testimony, criminal justice reform, and the power of forgiveness. She then formed an incredible friendship with the man she accused of her rape.
Oh, stop it, I just got goosebumps.
How amazing. Because what's happened, it's dead sad, because, like, when he gets out, he meets this amazing woman, like, they have a family.
Oh, good.
But she's dead protective, and she's like, no, don't go meet Jennifer.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I want to.
Yeah.
I want to meet her. And they meet, and he's like, I know it's not your fault. Like, whereas I would be a bitter little cunt, I'd be like, you ruined my life. He was like, no, babe.
You can see it from both, really. But
and then, they had then written a book together called Pick and Cotton. And this is where...
I'm sick! What a sick name! No. They need to make a film now. I know.
Pick and Cotton. And, like I say, that was the story of the perfect witness, question mark.
Oh my god, I loved it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was so like, there was twists.
There was turns, there was ups, there was downs.
Do you know what, as well? I've said this before, and I know a lot of people, like, it's most people, you know, no one wants this to happen, but that's something that gives me the creeps, is, you know, the thoughts of someone getting into your house,
don't,
isn't it?
Like, I know.
It's terrifying, the way he was just creeping on the floor. But it's so sad, obviously, on Ron.
I know.
But then it's, like, a look, I suppose it's a nice ending.
The good thing is, which I'm trying to look at the positives, is it happened when he was 22.
Yeah.
He then had to wait a couple of years. Pardon me, a couple of years for the trial, then he was sentenced and served 11 years, so he's going to be about, I think he's in his, like, hang on, 22, 32, I think he's, like, late 30s by the time he gets out, which isn't that old. I know that's, like, obviously that doesn't make up for what, and there's other things I've not mentioned in here, like, he didn't get any, like, compensation, he got, like, a shitty amount, so then she started being an advocate for, like, justice reform and how to compensate wrongly convicted criminals, and she's like an activist, a public speaker. She's is the example.
She did amazing. Yeah, she did. And even though she got it wrong, they did look the spiff.
Yeah, but it's a psych. It's that's a psychological her body or mind's way of dealing with trauma. She's gone. He's there. That's him.
Yeah.
So her in her mind, that memory's flipped to this new man.
That him. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was never him.
That's a nice end.
And
thank God he came into the same prison all of that.
What are the chances?
I love the bit where he, like, took the picture.
I know. Like, it's a film, honestly.
You've got to make a film.
But yeah, the book is Pick and Cotton. And the, where I've got most, well, pretty much, well, it's between the book and the podcast I listen to. And the podcast is from Southern Fried True Crime, which is unreal. But it's her detail. Her podcast is a little bit different to ours. Obviously, we're chatty.
Yeah.
Hers is, she's on her own. Erica Kelly, her name is. But she goes into the most detail. I could have done that. But she goes into detail about the town, where the town came from, how it got its name. Then she'll go into, like, laws, and she went into his background and, like, where he was born, how he grew up.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I could have done that, but it would be hours and hours long.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I pulled out the key information. But, yeah, Pick and Cotton, which is written by both Jennifer and Ronald, and then Erica Kelly, Southern Fried True Crime. If you want to listen to her, she's amazing. But yeah, that's that.
Oh my god, I loved it, and that is why
you don't talk to strangers. And we also forgot our fucking tagline. Grab a bevy.
It's about to get heavy. But we're not grabbing a bevy.
But still, we've been shit the past few weeks at remembering that. But yeah, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Don't Talk to Strangers Podcast, on Twitter at DTTS Poddy. Email us at don'ttalktostrangerspod@gmail.com
and
sign up to our Patreon, which is Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast.
Ooh, thanks
also,
everyone.
Leave us a review on iTunes. I keep forgetting to say that.
Oh, yeah. But
please do.
Yeah, please.
And be nice. Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
But thank you very much for listening.
I loved it.
We'll see you next week.
Ciao.